Tech of Sport with Mark Weil of the Weil Tennis Academy. This week on the Tech of Sports, Mark Weil. Modern Life Podcast mobile apps are a great way to receive our content on your smart devices. There's an app for both iOS and Android. Don't forget you can get the content on Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, and other various apps. The Tech of Sports, the proud member of the Tech Podcast Network, techpodcast.com. Tech is here, and the Tech of Sports is a proud production of the Modern Life Podcast Network at modernlifepodcastnetwork.com. Happy 2016 as we start the year here with the first Tech of Sports of the year, and we're going to start out talking a little tennis. It's pretty appropriate. We have the Australian Open coming up, and just an exciting start to the tennis season, and with a gentleman that's more than qualified to talk about what's going on in the world of tennis and tennis technology and his academy. It's Mark Weil of the Weil Tennis Academy in Ojai, California. So he's been in the tennis business for a while. He opened back in June of 1997. And he's the first coach to open a full-time boarding tennis academy in Southern California. He's trained many world junior champions, Grigor Dimitrov, currently one of the top pros, and women such as Vera Zvonareva, Cecil Krancheva. He's got a good stable of young juniors, I hear, right now. So it's great to have Mark on the show. And Mark, thanks for coming on, joining us from Ojai.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, Rick. Good to be on.
Yeah, it's the wintertime most of the country here. So, most of the tennis is taking place in other parts of the world. So it's going to mean late night for a tennis fanatic staying up and watching the Australian Open. So you looking forward to seeing what goes on here early in the year in the pro ranks?
Oh, man, it's always one of my favorite times of the year to lay back at 9:30 at night here in California and turn on Tennis Channel or ESPN2 and just watch the day's events. It's exciting to see the pros back on the court.
Yeah, it's live tennis and in prime time for you. If you're here on the East Coast, it's early morning. People really have to brew a couple of pots of coffee and stay up. But yeah. A fun time of the year. We'll talk about that in a little bit. And I guess we'll start out talking about the success of your academy. You really got it going strong there in California. Talk about when you developed and built the academy, started the academy, and just kind of how it's progressed.
Well, funny story. I actually was coaching down in Los Angeles and just really didn't like living in LA for the most part. I don't know why. I'd lived in New York City before and lived in the South and really felt comfortable, but somehow Los Angeles didn't quite click with me. And so I was looking for a place close by, but to stay in Southern California. And ran across a little town called Ojai, which it just takes your heart away. I guess it doesn't take everybody's heart away, but it took mine. So I feel like Ojai kind of chose me back then. And basically, it became my mission in life to get my school open in Ojai and try to attract some terrific tennis players and coaches and have a dynamic environment here. And I was very, very, very lucky. Wayne Bryan, the father of Mike and Bob, I met him a few months before I opened, and I invited him to be one of my coaches, actually my director of tennis that first year, and he agreed, which I kind of quickly got down on my knees and praised God.
Was he wearing sunglasses and carrying a racket with him at all times?
Listen, he takes a shower with sunglasses on, this guy. The sunglasses never come off. The hat rarely comes off. Wayne is a great friend and a huge supporter. And I would have never gotten open really without Wayne's help and support. He gave me a lot of guidance. So that was a great start. And we had some great kids that first year. Ryan Redondo, who took third in the Orange Bowl that year, Junior Orange Bowl that year. And we had a couple of number one players in Southern Cal. Nick Rainey came down. He ended up being a team champion at USC, NCAA finalists and doubles. And so we had a great group of kids right off the bat and had a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun for you. I know you're passionate about it. You love working with the juniors and seeing the development happen before your eyes. So tennis is an international sport, and you really have an international flavor there at the academy. And you like that, don't you?
I do. It's one of the bonuses of having the school. Tennis, there's players that are passionate about tennis all over the world, which is really cool. It's been rough for U.S. players recently in the last 10 years or so. But boy, I really don't care what country you're from. If you're passionate about it and you're motivated to improve every day, that's the kind of kid I want to be around. And that's the kind of kid I want to help. So I've been very lucky to have kids from Brazil and China and Japan and Mexico, Canada, France, Egypt, you name it. I think we have 18 countries represented here now. Denmark, I can't even come up with them all. So it's exciting for me because we learn about all these different cultures and religions, you know, Muslims, Christians, Jews, Moscow. We've got a bunch of kids from Moscow that are terrific kids, very, very motivated to go to good U.S. colleges and play tennis and study.
Well, what do you say, Mark, to the people that say these international people coming over and making use of our academies and our instructors and our coaches? And it really doesn't, you know, it's not solving the American tennis problem if there is one. What do you say to those detractors?
Well, I think they have every right to come over and train here and you know, develop here. I do believe that the U.S. has the best coaches in the world. I know I'm not alone when I say that, but you start looking at the college coaches that we have and the professional coaches that we have and the club pros that we have. And we have a pretty incredible group of coaches in this country. So the talent is there to develop the kids. I think we may have gone through a little bit of a lull in talent, in the kids that are really crazy about becoming top pro players. I think that's normal. I think this is a bit longer than we're comfortable with that we've gone through this little lull period. But I think you saw the girls come out of it first. Now you're seeing the boys. You watch these kids that are 17 and 18 right now, led by Taylor Fritz and Kozlov and Michael Moe. And Moe just beat Kozlov today in a futures out here in California. I mean, I'm forgetting somebody. Tommy Paul, I believe, also.
Francis
Tiafoe. I mean, geez, I've already named five or six guys who could have the talent to be top 20, top 10 in the world. That's not too bad.
Yeah, well, that just remains to be seen. We'll see what happens.
It does.
We'll see what happens with that. And I know that sports like baseball, football, basketball, they said back in the 70s and 80s, they took maybe some players that may have been earmarked as they could have been good tennis players. Now there's even more competition from sports like, you know, lacrosse and field hockey, volleyball. These sports are getting some great athletes that maybe gave up on tennis to specialize in another sport. So, you know, what can we do to keep the players that maybe would be have a strong tennis aptitude in the sport of tennis?
Well, I think first is exposing them to it. If the kids don't get exposed to tennis until they're 14, it's a little late, you know, to become a great, great player by then. But I think expanding the little programs all around the clubs, all around the country, having tournaments, a lot of available tournaments that are fun, you know, again, focused not on winning, but focused on having a great time and a lot of positive experience and make, you know, you don't call anybody a loser. I'm not for all that. Give you a participant trophy. Not everybody gets a trophy, but if you put your name in the draw, you're a winner. If you put your butt on the line to win or lose a match, you're pretty courageous in my book. Not everybody can do that. You're in the top 1% of all people on the planet. So I think all the kids that play tennis are winners because it's a tough sport. It takes a lot of perseverance. You lose a lot. There's a lot of failure that you have to, you build your success on some failures and losses. But, you know, you're out there trying and hopefully having fun and being with friends and good coaches that care about you. And, you know, it's tough. Now, tennis is not for everybody. I've always said that. You know, my kids didn't take to it like I did. You got to have a passion for it. And the kids are there. The kids are out there. We just have to expose them earlier.
Yeah, exactly. We're here on the Tech of Sports here with Mark Weil, the Weil Tennis Academy, and just great to talk with him. And Mark, other sports have been really big on technology and analytics. Mm-hmm. Tennis may be a little slower to it than some of the other sports, but now it's kind of taken hold a little bit. Where do you stand on your academy with using smart sensors and more technology in the training or in getting data about your students?
I think you can tell by my groan. I mean, that takes the fun out of it for me.
But is there a value to it for a developing a world class athlete? And is there a benefit of it?
I think for developing a world class athlete at a certain point in their career, I'd say more like 16 years old on up. But because I think again the margin of difference for between the number one player and the number four player is less than 1%. You see these stats on the points in a match and you'll see that, wow, they played 250 points and it was 125 to 126 or, 127 to 125. And so there where the margin is so close, yes, I think it would have helped somebody like, say, a Venus Williams. She had an issue on her serve and Serena didn't. And somebody showed me a Dartfish video and showed me what the issue was. And I thought, wow, if she had studied that a little bit earlier on, that might have helped her raise her first serve consistency. But it's just so small. So no, for me overall, for these kids that are 15, 14, 15, 16, and really aiming to go play at UCLA or Virginia or Georgia or, all these great schools that we have, I think it's a fun thing to use once in a while, but I wouldn't overdo it.
But maybe there's a benefit. You said there's a small margin of error. If the data could point out, a weakness or tendencies, if it could be used for that, maybe post-match study or pre-match study, are you adverse to possibly use it in that way?
No. And I like video. I do like video because, as you know, and anybody that has coached, players, their feedback is often very skewed, especially if they're tough on themselves, which usually some of the best players are. They're very hard on themselves, so they really tend to focus on what didn't go right, what didn't go well. And you sometimes have to point out, well, wait, look, you did this really well and you did that really well. So, you've got to balance out their perspective.
Yeah, exactly. And, the kids like the video study. I know that you're a proponent of video because I know your kids put up, videos to attract college coaches and they're well produced, they're well shot. And, they give information about the kids and they let the coaches get a good look at their game. So that's a big thing for you guys.
Yeah. And especially we call those college videos and we want to show the kids off. We use those as just a hook. We just want to show the athleticism and the sort of the dynamic movement of our kids and that their strokes are in good shape, that they know how to volley, that they move well on the court, that they can come forward just as well as they can go sideways, that they don't have any hitches on their serves. So we're very proud to show off our kids. But those college videos don't get kids college placements and they don't get scholarships. They just provide a little hook for the coach to get interested and then hopefully the relationship grows from there.
Yeah, it's an introduction to the player and kind of their style of play and their game.
Yeah.
So you do a good job with those. And a quick break here. Amazon here is a partner here at the network. And you can go to modernlifepodcastnetwork.com/Amazon for any and all of your shopping needs. Amazon books, products, lots of tennis equipment, sporting equipment. It's all available on Amazon. They've been a great partner here and a sponsor here at the network. modernlifepodcastnetwork.com/Amazon. Do you have a favorite tennis book at all, Mark, that you maybe will recommend to a student maybe that's struggling with their game or you think might need a little reinforcement with something? Any good tennis book that you like?
Not so much tennis books as just I love sports books.
Yeah.
There's been some great ones lately. One of them that I love is called Cinderella Man. And it was the story about James J. Braddock, the boxer. Yep. And it was made into a movie. But boy, the movie was terrific too. But boy, if you read the book, it is just fascinating what he really went through. And again, it's all these stories of somebody who's fighting for the light heavyweight championship of the world. And within 2 years later, he's on a breadline. He's about to lose his home, or he lost his home. He's about to lose an apartment, about to lose his kids. So, that's to me. And then he fights his way back, into the boxing world and becomes world champ, heavyweight champion of the world. And just a great story of somebody who never lost faith in themselves. So I love those kind of stories. Instant Replay, which is Jerry Kramer's book on the Green Bay Packers.
Fantastic one.
I think I've read that 5 times. Just loved about, you know, finding out more about Lombardi and just how he dealt with his players and how they dealt with each other and stuck together through all those hard times. And another one, believe it or not, is Raging Bull. Raging Bull is a fantastic book. It, not many people have read it. I've ended up giving that book to probably 20 people.
We all know the movie, though.
So. Oh, you've got to read the book. It's not long, and it's an autobiography. LaMotta writes it himself, I'm sure, with a ghostwriter, but he really explains why he was such a not a good guy for so long and what motivated him in the ring. But, you know, once he realized what was motivating him, he had this big self-realization and kind of came to terms with who he was.
You're a Southern California guy. Did you see the HBO Kareem Abdul-Jabbar documentary that's aired the last couple months?
Yeah, it's something about On the Outside.
Fantastic, well done. And again, for athletes, you know, Kareem is a great example to follow in a lot of aspects as far as becoming an athlete. You know, following his beliefs and kind of being his own person. So that's a great watch as well right now on HBO.
I agree. I saw it. I think it's true. And the way he and Wooden, not seeing eye to eye on everything and how they dealt with each other was great. Great. Yep, those relationships. That's what I'm talking about. You know, if there were better relationships, I think also between coaches and players, I think that's undervalued, but you see the ones that last, you know, Djokovic, has the same coach for how many years now?
He's got a whole team. He's got the same team behind.
Exactly. You know, when Brad Gilbert and Andre, that was a fantastic combination. We can go on and on. Boy, it's not a fluke that those players are successful when they've got that kind of consistency and support and coaches that really understand how to be in relationship with a player.
A lot of those relationships start when the player's young and it carries through to their career. So that's good to see. I know you wanted to talk about Mark the Ojai and the college tournament, another special event. I've known lots of players that have played in it. It's something they remember the rest of their lives, and that's kind of the whole point of it. And again, you talk about relationships, and you talk about getting an education and performing on a big stage. That's really what the Ojai is all about. Talk about that. And you guys are coming up on a milestone year, I think, here, aren't you?
Yeah, it's 116 years, and it's the oldest tournament played in the same spot in the United States. And I tell you that when I was on the committee in 2000, that we came up with a Wall of Fame, and we had to finally narrow down because the names of the players were so incredible that have played this tournament. We had to narrow it down to players that won the Ojai and then won a Grand Slam tournament. And we came up with 87 of them.
Oh, my goodness.
And this was in the year 2000. Since then, you know, Mike and Bob have won everything, you know, multiple times. But so, I mean, when you go to Stan Smith and Arthur Ashe and Jack Kramer and Don Budge and Bobby Riggs and Bill Tilden, and then on the women's side, Billie Jean King all the way back and Rosie Casals and all these players that have played the Ojai, it's really an heirloom. Really a jewel of the West out here. And the college tournament, there's actually several college tournaments contained within the Ojai. The most famous one is the Pac-12 Conference Championships. And, you know, when you got the women's teams come to town and there's 12 of them and 6 of them are in the top 30 in the country, 2 of them are in the top 5. And then the men's side, you've got 8 teams coming in and 5 of them are in the top 16. So you see really the best of college tennis right here on our home courts, basically here in Ojai, Libby Park and at the Academy. So we are really blessed with one of the finest events in the country.
And it must make you feel good when it's kind of a homecoming, maybe one of the players coming back to play and it was one of your students or, charges there at the Academy. That's got to make you feel pretty good.
And it's really incredible to watch them change each year, you know, because we've been, again, very fortunate to put players on the teams at USC and UCLA and Berkeley and Stanford and, you know, go on and on, both on the men's and women's side. So we get, you know, it's very inspirational to go see, you know, bring our kids, current 15 and 16 year olds out and go, look, you know, that kid was staying in your room, you know, 4 years ago, same dorm room, basically. And, you know, we go see college matches probably like 5 or 6 times, in the spring semester. We'll go to take our kids to Pepperdine or USC, UCLA, UC Santa Barbara. We'll go to a D3 match or two at Cal Lutheran or Westmont. So we try to expose our kids to college tennis matches. You'd be surprised how many American kids have never seen a college tennis match.
I would say that most people haven't, even, you know, fans of college sports. They love that. And there's some great venues to watch college tennis at in this country, from, you know, UCLA, Pepperdine to University of Georgia's got the fantastic facility there where actually they do get crowds to come out and watch. So it can be an exciting sport.
I've been to Athens for the NCAA championships, I think 3 different times. Boy, that was so heartwarming to see so many rabid fans at a tennis match. It was great.
And no one sent more players directly or indirectly to American universities than you have through your academy. So what's the state of college tennis here in America now on, you know, the Division I level through back down through Division III or NAIA? I mean, it's a struggle for some of these minor sports at the universities. So, you know, what's where do we stand with tennis? I know it could be better, I guess, but, you know, it's still there.
Well, I think college tennis is as strong as it possibly could be. In other words, you know, if you go watch UCLA play USC, for example, boy, you're going to see 4 or 5 guys that are going to be out on the pro tour in the next 2 or 3 years, you know, from Steve Johnson to Daniel Nguyen to Clay Thompson to, you know, Nick Meister. And I could go on and on and on. I mean, not all of these guys are going to end up top 20, but Steve Johnson played all 4 years. John Isner, James Blake, the Bryan brothers, you know, there's a lot of terrific players. So there's still the pro level in college. And most of my students are amazed when they get out there and they go, they had no idea that college players were that good. So the top programs are fantastic. And I think, again, I think there's plenty of opportunity. Yeah, there's not as many D1 programs as there used to be, but the D3 programs at the top, you know, Claremont, McKenna.
Fun to watch. They're fun to watch. Those kids are playing. Because they love the game.
And they're damn good. I watched Claremont McKenna practice last spring. Fantastic group of guys. I mean, Emory and Wash U and the top D3s are D1. I mean, solid D1 level teams. So again, I go back to coaches. There's a lot of terrific college coaches out there too. The opportunities are there. It's competitive. And the international kids right now are out fighting our American kids for spots. And that doesn't make me happy. I feel like instead of closing off opportunity to international kids, why don't we up the stakes for our own kids? Why don't we try harder? Why don't we work harder to win those spots?
Hope that that happens. And Mark, here's your chance. If people want to find out more about your academy or have questions for you, how can they see what's going on at the academy? How can they contact you? Anything else you want to promote?
Well, they can just go to www.weiltennis.com. That's WEIL tennis.com. If you search, you know, Southern California Tennis Academies, you'll find us. And again, we're not for everybody. We're very much education oriented. And I believe in the student athlete. I believe you've got to be a student first and then an athlete. And education is the most important thing. It's the thing that lasts. As you know, your knee can get injured or your elbow or your wrist or your something else can go wrong. And suddenly, you know, you've got to have passions for something else too. So I have a passion for tennis, but I also have a passion for literature and art. I do love running a school. I love education. I love young people. I have a passion for, you know, young people and their dreams and so forth. So, you know, tennis shouldn't be your only passion. You know, life is incredible. It's just an incredible, we're all so lucky to have this experience and keep exploring and keep finding what turns you on and makes your heart race a little bit.
That's very well said. And that's great advice for kids because, you know, tennis is a sport, a lifetime sport, a family sport, mm-hmm. but it can also lead to other opportunities as well. So getting the education along with playing tennis is in a lot of instances a very good combination.
I think the best. The best.
I think so, too. And college sports are definitely fun to watch. And I know you got a passion for it. And Mark, give me maybe one name of maybe a player. We're going to hear their name of in the next 5 years a lot. Do you have somebody there that not just a single one person out, but yeah. Who should people maybe file a name away in the back of their brain, a name?
Yeah, we got this great girl. She's 13 years old, and she's just starting to figure out sort of the international level. She did train in Atlanta for a short period.
I think I know who you're going to say. Go ahead.
Her name is Scout Matthews, and she is a fantastic girl. Talk about, you know, she's got that character that you look for. She's got great character. She loves to compete. She doesn't beat herself up, you know, if she loses. She's just more balanced. And I think you've got to have a sort of a healthy perspective of winning and losing and competition. And I think Scout's got that. She's a great girl, very smart, and looking forward to working with her.
Great. I'm sure you're going to do a great job. And, you know, thanks to Steve Pratt for hooking this interview up. This has been a good one. And hopefully
Have you taken Steve out to lunch lately?
I've been out to lunch with Steve, and, I haven't seen him reach for his wallet yet in the 10 years almost I've known him. So I don't know if you've had the same experience with Steve or not.
Well, he actually told me he doesn't even have a wallet. So, you know, I guess he'll never be reaching for it.
Yeah, I thought he had that American Express Black Card that, you know, had an no limit on it. A guy of his stature.
It's black. I don't know if it's got I think it's got its limits though.
maybe he's got other reasons. So Mark, just thanks for coming on. I want everyone to check out your website. We'll put all the information in the show notes, and all right. let's hope for a good year for the sport of tennis.
You got it. Thanks so much, Rick. That was a blast.
Thanks, Mark. Hold on for 1 second as we wrap up. And another episode of the Tech of Sports in the book, and we just want to let you know that the Modern Life Podcast Network has many other shows which may be of interest to you. Go over to modernlifepodcastnetwork.com. Check them all out. They're all on there, and some new shows added on recently as well. Also, Two Thumbs Up Media, twothumbsupmedia.com. The internet and broadcast directory set up by the people here. It's a great way to receive to discover new shows and receive new content. So you've been listening to the Tech of Sports podcast, a Modern Life Podcast Network production.